This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
In a few minutes, ever wonder how the president would make out under this tax plan? From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. With the House of Representatives set to vote today on its plan for American taxes, what can we learn from a person who's been through a big tax overhaul before, one that actually got passed into law? In the mid-1980s, under President Ronald Reagan, there was a Treasury Secretary named Donald Regan. Under him was a Deputy Assistant Secretary for Tax Analysis named Gene Sterley, who these days is head of the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center set up by the Urban Institute in Brookings. Mr. Sterley, good morning.
Delighted to be here.
So Republicans have their bill to change the tax system here in 2017. You have lived through the last big tax reform under President Reagan, 1986. You've got some advice to offer these hardworking tax reformers, and I think it's something to do with fundamental principles. What principles?
Well, in tax reform, there are some basic principles that most people would agree with. One of them is if you have people who are equally situated, we should probably treat them equally. Roughly speaking, that means if you have the same income as I do, we should pay about the same amount of tax. Another one is efficiency. Simplicity is an obvious one. The ones that are a little more controversial have to do with one aspect of efficiency, which is size of government. If government's bigger but doesn't achieve anything, that's a loss. And then one of the big debates is always progressivity, which is an attempt to say those who can pay more should pay more. And those are the basic principles, and you try to balance them.
But this is not just a philosophical exercise. You think there's a better chance of something actually coming together that works if you think about these principles first?
That's right. So we all probably have this set of wants. Lower tax rates, that's a legitimate want. You might want to give more to the poor. That's a legitimate want. You might worry about the corporate tax. That's a legitimate want. But you can't just sort of stack up a set of wants and figure out how it's going to accommodate. It doesn't mean you're going to do it very efficiently. And then another issue is the balance sheets. You know, a tax cut today that's not paid for basically means somewhere somebody's going to pay more or get less spending. Adding up a set of wants doesn't get you to a good reform package.
And you tried to do this? You saw this at play in 1986, where you think about the principles first and proceed from there?
Right. So one of the things we did was we went to the secretary. We said, okay, here are a variety of exceptions to taxation, you know, all sorts of tax breaks here and there. And let's figure out which tax breaks we'll go after. And then, and this is crucial, then we decided how much rate reduction we could finance out of those tax breaks.
Economist Gene Sterley is at the Urban Institute. He's co-founder of the Tax Policy Center. Mr. Sterley, thank you.
Thank you.
Checking markets, the FTSE in London is little changed at the moment. About 2.5 hours here before the opening bell on Wall Street, S&P futures are up 0.3%, plus 52 points for the Dow future, 0.2%. Interest rates up, the yield on the 10-year note up at 2.36%. Now let's do the taxes for just one man in America. Washington Post columnist Alan Sloan has been working out how the tax plans, as we know them at the moment, might play out in one high-profile case. Welcome, Alan.
Good morning, David.
Who is this American?
Donald Trump.
All right. You've reduced it to 5 ways you think the president might profit off this tax plan?
Right. It's the 5-fecta. The first one is getting rid of the estate tax, which would save his family a lot of money. How much we can argue about, but a lot.
Well, I mean, in the campaign, he said like $10 billion he's worth. So if someday it passes to his heirs?
Right. If that were true, he would say his heirs would say $4 billion, but it's not true. It's maybe a mere $1 or $2 or $3 billion, but you're still looking in hundreds of millions of dollars.
And the president presumably would do well on this elimination of what's called the alternative minimum tax.
The only thing we know about the president's tax returns is that in 2005, he paid $31 million of alternative minimum tax. We have no idea what's going on now because we don't have his tax returns. But I'm just going to assume that he pays a lot of it. And if you got rid of it, he wouldn't pay any.
Something else that might cheer up the president, you write, has to do with pass-throughs. That's if you have a business interest, it's taxed on your individual return?
Right. The way it is now, anybody who gets money from these things pays like regular income tax, which for Trump is presumably 39.6%. But for reasons that are not clear, what they call passive investors, people who don't run the company, would pay only 25%, and the people who run the company would pay more than that. And it's amazing that not long ago, Trump stopped being active and became passive.
Well, also became president, so he didn't want to have direct connection to these businesses.
Oh, I'm sure. And the thought of a lower tax rate clearly never entered his mind.
All right, the last two of this five-fecta of yours have to do with sections 3301 and 3303. Broad brush, what are these about?
These are loophole-closing things where they don't really close the loopholes involving real estate. And when last heard from, real estate was the president's business.
All right, Washington Post columnist Alan Sloan is also editor-at-large at ProPublica. Alan, thank you.
My pleasure, David.
Also today, we talked to a personal finance writer who says it's way too early for you and me to do any tax planning based on this overhaul. If you missed that on the air, it'll be in the Marketplace Morning Report podcast feed later on today. And two more numbers before we go. We talked to that art critic yesterday about how hard it is to fully authenticate a painting. Yet what is, in theory, a Leonardo da Vinci went for $450 million at auction, Christie's last night in New York, a record. Also, critic Blake Gopnik yesterday got his math tangled when he mentioned what an art expert can charge for authenticating a high-profile work. That number is in the low thousands. Think maybe $4,000 for a job like that? In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.